Welcome to Smart Energy at Potech.net. I'm your host, Margot Gerritsen. Hello and welcome to Smart Energy, a podcast about energy issues brought to you by Potech.net. And today we'll start a debate on nuclear energy. Obviously, nuclear energy is put forward by many people as a possible answer to our energy crisis, greenhouse gas emission crisis, if you'd like. Let's call it that way. And today I'm talking to John Kumi, who is a staff scientist at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab and a consulting professor at Stanford University. And John has been working on issues of energy technology and policy for at least two decades, and recently completed a study which he submitted to the Journal of Energy Policy on historical costs of nuclear plants in the US. Costs are a very important part in the debate, of course, here. Three studies done by MIT, University of Chicago, and Generation 4 Reactor Group have recently been completed on projected future costs. And they show quite low costs, which of course policymakers will take into account when they make decisions on nuclear power plants in the near future. And John has looked at how these costs relate to history and tried to figure out which areas policymakers should pay attention to. But first, let's talk a little bit more about nuclear energy in general. We have heard people in the podcasts already saying that they are in favor. Other people are vehemently against for all sorts of reasons, including environmental reasons and safety reasons and nuclear weapons. What are your views here?
I tend to be pretty agnostic about this particular technology, but let's talk a bit about the pros and cons and lay them out in a clear way. One of the issues that people need to be concerned about is emissions of greenhouse gases. And nuclear reactors do not emit any greenhouse gas emissions directly. So that's one area where nuclear power has an advantage over some other sources. The issues related on the cost side relate again to the historical experience in the U.S. and in other countries where the costs of nuclear plants were much more than what were initially projected for these plants. So that was one of the reasons why we wanted to look back at history and try to understand some of the reasons why the costs turned out the way they did, and to do the best we can to apply those lessons and see if we could learn something about the projections of future costs from those historical costs. So some of the issues that come up in the nuclear debate include whether you can build plants cost effectively. Also, there's a question of storage of the nuclear waste. How much will it cost? Where will you do it? Can you do it for the length of period that you will need to make the spent fuel safe? There's questions also about proliferation. So there's potential issues for certain countries, for example, such as North Korea and Iran, as two examples of countries that have started down the path of what's called peaceful use of nuclear power, but at least in the case of North Koreans, we know for sure that they use that path in order to get nuclear weapons. So that's an issue as well. If the plants can be built as cheaply as the industry seems to indicate that they can be, in the U.S. at least, that is a strong argument for considering nuclear power as one of the future contributors to our energy mix, because right, it does not emit greenhouse gas emissions directly.
It's already a pretty big thing in the U.S., right? Nuclear power. I mean, it's giving about 20% of total electricity production.
Exactly. So about 20% of U.S. electricity production comes from nuclear power. So in that sense, it's been a large success in the U.S. The concern over nuclear plants has been the cost of the plants, the cost to build them, the cost to operate them. In other countries, there's a few other countries where the fraction of electricity used from nuclear power is higher than the U.S. And France is the example usually pointed to. Between 70 and 80% of their electricity comes from nuclear plants. Germany, and Japan get about 30% of their electricity, and the U.S. and the United Kingdom get about 20%. So some large countries rely on nuclear power for a significant fraction of their electricity demand.
So you're saying we have about 100 plants right now that are operational, but there are many plans on the table for new nuclear power plants. So can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. In 2005, the Congress passed and the President signed the Energy Policy Act of 2005, and that legislation gave incentives for constructing new nuclear plants, gave loan guarantees, gave incentives also for operating existing plants. And those incentives have garnered interest from the industry, and right now almost 30 plants have been, there's been interest expressed in building almost 30 new reactors. Now, of course, you know, we'll have to see how many of those actually start construction, but the incentives certainly have garnered a lot of interest, and there are some large utilities who are very serious about building new plants. So I would expect that there would be at least a few of these plants begun and completed in sometime in the next 10 years.
So what were some of the incentives put in this Energy Policy Act in 2005?
So one of the incentives is what's called a production tax credit. And that is similar to production tax credits that have been in place for wind generation and some other renewable energy sources for a long time. And that means that for every kilowatt hour they produce, there's some cost per kilowatt hour that's offset by a tax credit for those operation of those plants. There are also loan guarantees for new plants. There's also some guarantees to help the industry build the first plants. The guarantees would prevent the cost overrun. We basically say the government will guarantee that even if the costs go over a certain amount, that the utility will not have to pay for that. And that's important for building new technologies, because there's often risk in creating new technology, and you're learning as you go along. And the first few of a new generation of reactors is likely to have some unforeseen issues that come up.
Now, the plans that are on the table, are they for plants that are just as large as the ones that we have at the moment, or are they very much larger?
Is it? These are typical nuclear plants built in the U.S. over the last 20 years came in at about 1,000 megawatts. And the new plants that are being proposed are at a similar scale to that. So very similar in size. There have been many improvements in the way that the plants will be constructed. There have been changes in the licensing process. And so we'll see, time will tell as to whether those changes will lead to the costs being significantly improved over the last generation. But in terms of the size, they're very similar.
So one of the interesting things about power plants is that the breakdown of the costs changes quite a bit from one type to another. So if you're looking at a gas-fired power plant, for example, the fuel costs are generally larger than the capital costs. But with nuclear power plants, that's not the case, right?
Yeah, so nuclear plants tend to be more capital-intensive than other forms of electricity generation. So what that means is that as a fraction of the total cost per kilowatt-hour of generating the electricity, capital costs are a much larger fraction for a nuclear plant than for a gas plant and also for a coal plant.
And so what about the fuel costs? They're relatively low. Where does this fuel come from?
Fuel costs are very low, typically half a cent to 1 cent per kilowatt hour for the generation of nuclear electricity. And the fuel comes from a number of different countries, including Canada, Australia, Russia, Niger, and also from the decommissioning of some nuclear weapons materials that has happened over the last 15 years or so.
So let's go to your study. And first of all, tell us what were the major findings of your study and what made this study particularly useful?
So first, what we did was we looked at the historical costs of nuclear reactors, and we wanted to understand what lessons those historical costs might hold for the new reactors that are being proposed. And when we did that calculation for 99 of the reactors in the U.S., what we found was that the costs of those historical plants turned out to be higher than the overall costs associated with these projections. And so another way to say it is that the projections of nuclear costs tended to be as cheap or cheaper than any reactor ever built in the U.S. And so that's kind of a stunning statement, and it gets people's attention when you say it. And we started from there and said, okay, let's see if that could be the case. And we looked at each component of the costs. So in a power plant, the costs include the fuel costs. There's the cost of capital, which we talked about as the major component for a nuclear plant. There's the cost of operation and maintenance. There's the cost of storing the spent fuel once it's done. There's the cost of decommissioning the reactor at the end of its life. And there are costs associated with backup power on the utility grid, because not all plants are perfectly reliable, so you have to have other plants available to cover for it. So those are the major cost components, and we looked at all of those for nuclear plants, for both the projected and the existing capital costs. And what we found was that the capital costs tended to be low compared to historical experience. The construction duration, in other words, how long it takes to build a plant, tended to be on the low side. And the operation and maintenance costs tended to be on the low side compared to historical costs.
So when you're calculating these costs and you're looking at, for example, the lifetime costs of a nuclear power plant, what's of course important is to know what the capacity factor is of a plant like that, meaning, you know, how much of the time, what percentage of the time will you be able to run this power plant effectively. So for a nuclear power plant, what is it right now, and has there been a large change, and could a growing capacity factor be an explanation for this discrepancy, for example?
Okay, so capacity factors are very important for understanding the total cost of the plant. And the reason is that if you generate more kilowatt hours, if you have a higher capacity factor, it means the plant runs more hours in a year. That means you'll be able to generate more kilowatt hours, and that means that every cost that you have will be spread over a larger number of kilowatt hours. Cents per kilowatt hour means that more kilowatt hours means a lower cost of electricity. So it's extremely important to think about the capacity factor. In the nuclear industry, there's been very substantial improvements in capacity factor over the last 20 years. Starting in the mid-1980s, the capacity factors for U.S. plants were in around 55%. So that meant that the plant ran 55% of the year. The other parts of the time, the plant was not operating, either because there was refueling of the reactor, or the plant had to be fixed in some way, or there wasn't enough demand on the system, so they had to ramp the plant back a little bit because they had too much power on the system. And so what happened over the course of the last 20 years is that many of the smaller utilities that ran nuclear plants, built and ran nuclear plants, sold those plants to large reactor operators who are very experienced and very smart about how they run the plants. So what you've seen over the last 20 years is an increase in this capacity factor of the plants running 55% of the year to now running almost 90% of the year.
How does that compare with other types of power plants? Now, for example, if you compare capacity factor of a gas-fired power plant or a coal-fired power plant?
Well, a baseload gas-fired plant or a baseload coal plant tends to come in the 80 to 90% range, right? Same for a baseload gas-fired power plant. So they can all achieve those availabilities and those capacity factors. And the constraint tends to be how much does it cost? And this is where actually nuclear power has an advantage in the operations, because the low fuel cost means that they want to run that plant all the time as much as they can. If the price of gas goes up a lot, that means that there's an incentive to reduce the operation of the gas plant, because a much larger fraction of the total cost of the gas electricity is actually in the fuel. And so there's an incentive to ramp that back a bit. Whereas for the nuclear plant, you just want it to run all the time as much as you can.
Now, looking at your report, one of the things that I found very interesting is that in the graphs that you present for the cost of each of these 99 plants that you've investigated, For some plants, the costs are extremely high. And one graph in particular that got my attention was the duration of construction. Now, you show this, and obviously that has a great deal to do with your final cost estimate. But for some of these plants, it took a very long time to complete them. Can you give some examples of what makes this occur?
Okay, so let's first start by saying that construction duration is important because it means that the interest costs on the capital that you're using gets accumulated over a longer and longer period. If you have a long construction duration, you have to pay a lot more interest. Now, there's many reasons why some of these plants took a long time to build. One of the reasons often pointed to by nuclear advocates is the changes in the safety regulations that occurred after the Three Mile Island accident in 1979. And what we know from how plants used to be built in the U.S. was that many of these plants were started, the construction was started, and the plant had only been designed, you know, only 40% of the plant had been designed at the time that they started it. You also had these changes in the safety regulations coming into play and affecting reactors that were halfway built. So it meant that they had to change many of the things that they were doing to deal with these new regulations. But that's not the only reason why these construction durations were extended. Sometimes utilities actually extended the construction duration intentionally because they ran out of money, they didn't have enough financing, or the demand for electricity use wasn't growing as fast as they thought, so they didn't want the plant to come in as soon as they originally thought because they didn't have the capacity to handle it in the system. And another big reason has to do with mistakes that were made by utilities that were building these plants. One of the famous examples is that of Diablo Canyon, where they almost completed the plant and then they discovered that there was an earthquake fault offshore, and then they rebuilt the plant to deal with that, and then they found out that somebody had switched the blueprints, so it was kind of a mirror image. The pipes didn't meet up, and so they had to build it again. And so mistakes like that, you know, there are many examples of that as well. And so, you know, it's not just about changes in safety regulations. There are other factors that led to these long construction durations and high costs.
Well, there are technologies out there now, new technologies that actually lead to a reduction of waste that's produced during the electricity generation process. So the new reactors that people are proposing to build in the United States, are they of that new kind, or is it still the old technology with a similar amount, similar volume of waste produced?
The reactors that are proposed to be built are of a similar type to what went before, in the sense of the fuel cycle being similar. The U.S. made a decision in the 70s to not pursue reprocessing of waste, and we did that for reasons related to proliferation, nuclear weapons, among other things. If we were to change that and go to reprocessing, that would probably reduce the volume of the material that's required, but it would also make that material a bit harder to handle on a per pound basis. So it's more radioactive, but there's a lot less of it. But that's something, that is one of the ways that society could choose to deal with this issue, is to go down the reprocessing path, less material, and perhaps, you know, spread out the capacity of the site. But the site isn't even open yet. It's supposed to open, I think, in 2010. It's a very political topic. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So that is definitely an issue for this. If there's to be a large expansion of nuclear power, we need to come, as a society, need to come to some agreement about how the waste is going to be stored. Because right now it's being stored on-site for almost all of the reactors that exist. And that's not necessarily the best thing from a cost perspective, a safety perspective, or even a national security perspective.
So you've just completed this study. Now, if you had the time and the money to extend this research or to look at other issues related to nuclear energy and policy, what would you be focusing on? Are there any areas that really need to be investigated before decisions are made on new power plants, or what do you think?
I think you need to separate the question of whether there's more nuclear plants in the U.S. from the question of whether there should be an expansion of nuclear power in the world at large. I think one of the key questions that needs to be dealt with is the non-proliferation treaty. Because right now there is a big gaping hole in that treaty, which allowed North Korea and is probably allowing Iran to use the path of peaceful use of nuclear power to get nuclear weapons. And there are technical ways to deal with that, but I think that the industry needs to face that question and deal with it squarely. And we as the United States, for the purposes of national security, need to deal with this question. That's a really important thing for expansion of nuclear power in countries that don't now have it. In terms of the U.S., I think that the question of causality from history is important. So the data set that we've created will allow regression analysis to help us disentangle some of the reasons why things came out the way they did. And I think that could lead to some insights that would help in the design of regulations as well as the design of plants. I think that there's a lot of interesting issues about how the plants are constructed and whether the changes that have been made in regulations, the changes that have been made in technology, will be sufficient to reduce the costs and reduce the construction durations to get to the stage where the industry believes that it can get to. So those are the areas, I think, where there's some potential for future work.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, John, for
My
talking
pleasure.
To us.
My pleasure.